Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Can I catch you off guard for a second?
I'm not good in these situations. People don't understand that I actually script every line of this podcast. Even what I'm saying right now, I'm reading off of a script.
Even the absolute nonsense you usually come up with, that's scripted.
I hide it well, but it's all scripted.
Can you hit the Champions League music just for a quick second?
Oh.
Is that all right? So you won't be hearing that at English grounds, and you didn't hear it tonight in the City of Manchester Stadium or whatever they're calling it now.
The Etihad?
The Etihad, sorry.
Is this new?
You won't be hearing this song because the Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, she has passed away. She's died. And that song is a derivation or a slightly hijacked version of a song by Handel, which was played at her coronation in 1952. And if you listen to or watch any footage of the Queen's coronation in 52, you'll hear this rising kind of strings and you're like, is this a coronation? Are the whole royal family about to sit down and watch Wednesday night in Salzburg or Milan or somewhere?
I never knew this.
Yeah, I saw it on the internet. And the composer of the Champions League music admitted, yes, I borrowed some of the essence of it. From Handel. Now, what's Handel going to do? He's dead 200 years or however many years. He's not going to get upset now. And the estate of Handel comes after you. But if you listen, yeah, if you try and find footage of, and there's plenty of Windsor footage going around in the last week, you'll be able to listen to that and you'll be able to think that there is a...
this is a stunning revelation.
The building to it that kind of is definitely Champions League, or it's definitely Handel. Really, let's give him credit.
How about that?
Yeah,
you know, I went to the New York Philharmonic to see Handel's Messiah once in the holiday season,
and
it was incredible.
Yeah,
haven't been back since. Probably will never go again. But it was spectacular.
No, but you've been to Hans Zimmer since.
Also incredible. Are you making fun of that?
No, it's awesome. Zimmer is great, but it kind of shows your sensibilities.
What do you
mean? Like, if Zimmer was playing tomorrow and you had a ticket, you'd go in a heartbeat.
Of course.
Handel's Messiah? Not so much.
I've seen it.
You've seen Zimmer as well.
He's got new movies out.
You'd sit through The Rock. Oh, my God. Listen.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, okay.
All of them.
Zimmer, great. Handel.
Also great.
Okay.
I want to be clear. Also great. Wow. Also great. Whatever we're about to do over the course of the next hour or so. Lots of Champions League action to discuss. But also, once again, U.S. soccer Twitter ablaze this afternoon.
I wouldn't say ablaze.
You're right. I'm overselling it.
I think smoldering. Like, there was definitely smoke.
Sometimes you use hyperbolic language to excite people.
Well, I'm excited to talk about it. But the
September squad is out, and there's a lot of interesting things to talk about.
Because it definitely is.
Because you're right. I don't know that people are stunned by what's on there, but I also don't know that people fully understand how to read into this squad.
Well, Greg is... I mean, I said to you off air, some of this could be kabuki theater. I think Greg knows his squad pretty much, apart from one or two guys who he's going to ask, wow me, make me bring you in these games against Saudi Arabia and the other game is
Japan. That one's in Düsseldorf, I believe.
Yes. So wow me. But we'll get to that. And there's also an excellent mailbag. What I believe to be a quite stunning mailbag.
Stunning. I've seen it. It's excellent. Stunning is a whole nother echelon.
I thought we were doing hyperbole.
You know what? You're right. This should be a fun one. Let's get right into the Champions League, though. We'll start with that, as those games have only just wrapped up a short while ago. Where to begin? How about the Allianz? Is that okay?
Yeah, that was yesterday, though.
I know.
So that's not just finished.
Well, no, that one hasn't, but the other one, you want to go with recency? We can go recency.
No, let's do yesterday. I kind of want to talk about yesterday.
Yeah, so do I. We'll start with Bayern Munich and Barcelona, the glamour fixture on the slate over the past couple days. And what do you know? 2-0 Bayern defeat Barca once again. They spoil Robert Lewandowski's return to Germany. I will say this. I was not entirely sure how he would be received, and he was cheered, and I was glad to see that.
I think the fans pretty much said, look, his gripe is with the club, not with us. Look at all the amazing things he did for us. Are we really...
But a lot of times fans have a hard time separating.
Well, look at Russell, Russell Wilson.
Exactly. What Russell Wilson did, the injuries he played through, the things that he won for the Seahawks, but the club, as you say, the franchise in this case, they had a gripe with Russell Wilson, and the fans took their cues from the team.
Yeah.
So a lot of times the fans don't separate the two. You're either with us or you're against us.
They went so against Russell Wilson to the point they were shouting for Geno Smith.
I thought it was actually embarrassing.
It was too much.
I thought it was embarrassing. But at any rate, I don't want to go off topic. But along those lines, I was glad to see Lewandowski over the course of the last decade has been the best player for Bayern Munich in one of their best eras. And so I thought it was right. I thought it was the right thing for him to get the applause that he got.
Ah, certainly. And look, he did as much as he could to torch bridges on the way out with other people in the club, with the sporting directors, the people who make the decisions. But I think in the hearts of the fans, Andrew, he's still Lewandowski.
Yeah. This was an opportunity for Barcelona. You know how I've talked about them over the past few weeks, that I believe that they should be placed on contender status when we're talking about this competition. And going into that building, a team that they have struggled mightily against over the last however many times they've been there, they can't beat Bayern Munich.
You want the stats on it? So Barcelona won the XG battle last night, which anyone who watched the game would have said the preponderance of good chances really were towards Barcelona.
Well, especially in the first half.
First 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They could have had 2-3 goals.
Yeah.
Barca win the XG battle, says the Opta analyst, but the war is 16 goals to 2 in actual goals to Bayern over the last four meetings. Miserable.
It's not what a club like Barcelona are accustomed to. I don't care who the competition is.
No, I know Xavi said, look, it was a rallying cry after the game. He said, I'm so annoyed. We should have won the game. We were that much better. And I kind of do agree with him, because the Bayern goals were like two quick blitzes. And that was it. But Munich were much more in the game in the second half. And, I mean, Nagelsmann's decision to pull Sabitzer at halftime and bring in Goretzka was a game changer in one respect. Also, on the Leroy Sané goal, I know I'm jumping all over the place there. But that's such a good goal, such a good finish. How on earth is there such a gap down the middle of the Barca, like right in front of the Barca centre-backs and between the Barca centre-backs? Like, this is supposed to be the Champions League. Like, Barcelona, as amazing as Pedri was, and he was amazing, I thought he was breathtaking. That chance in the second half that he flicked off and hit the outside of the post. You know, Lewandowski should have had a hat-trick, in my opinion. He could have.
That's quite a thing to say for a guy who finished with zero goals, but, I mean, I get your point.
Well, maybe two. Let's say he should have had two. He could conceivably have two goals. Maybe not a hat-trick. But Barca will go nowhere if they defend like that. And while I'm on the defending tip, Marcus Alonso.
He had a bad night.
That is just absolutely... let's go with the hyperbole. Criminal defending on Hernandez. You know what I hate about it most? Like, it's a great delivery from Kimmich, that said. But what I really, really hated about it was that Alonso initially gets physical. Like, so when you're marking on a set piece in a corner, a lot of players do it, and I like to do it. I'll go up and touch the guy that I'm picking up right before the corner's taken, or I'll like shove into him slightly, or you'll just kind of let him know you're there. And you see it all the time. And he does that and then decides, okay, that's my job done, and then does nothing. And Hernandez just blows by him and nods home. It's pathetic. And he's supposed to be a senior character, an old pro, an experienced pro that you're bringing into the club it disgusted me. Absolutely disgusted me. And once that happens, it's kind of over.
Well, I mean, in hindsight, certainly. I don't know that I thought that on the night. Because like we said, up to that point, Barcelona were very much in that game.
But you've given a home site a goal.
Well, I think
that and the momentum.
What's demoralizing is after all of the opportunities that Barcelona had, they squandered them, and then Bayern come out and score just like that. And it feels like that much more of a gut punch when you've blown opportunities yourself.
So I made a little list of the Barcelona chances. So the early Pedri chance, the dribble where he hits it at the legs of Neuer. Lewandowski has two chances. The volley that sits up for him, did you not think that net was going to rattle?
Of course. We've seen it how many times?
Yeah. The second one was one that sat up for him too, but I think it's a brilliant tackle. I can't remember who the Bayern defender is that comes around. I don't know.
I remember the play.
Yeah. I think it's a really good tackle. But again, it's a real chance for him. Then there's the header at the far post. Rafinha has a better chance than people give it credit for, and he drags it by the post. Pedri in the second half as well. But so I think it was after the first goal, maybe after both goals. But yeah, I don't know. It's Bayern were kind of okay. They were fine. Barca were really good at times, but also flawed. Is it fair to say both these teams might have fatal flaws that puts them well behind in the pecking order of your Manchester City?
So if we're going with our tiers.
Yeah. Oh, the tiers.
Yeah.
John Muller's tiers.
So if we're going with tiers, Manchester City occupy the top tier.
Yeah. Can we still
Is Real Madrid with them? I believe they are.
Right, and can we still, and then do we put Liverpool top of the second tier or in the middle with those teams?
So do we think right now, we're going to just say that Real Madrid and Manchester City are, that is the top tier.
I mean, Real Madrid were not great against Leipzig last night and they had their troubles against Celtic in the previous week, but let's do it because they seem to be a bulletproof team in this competition.
And then tier two, you believe Liverpool?
I mean, it's cup
PSG, Bayern.
PSG, Bayern, and Barca. Then at the maybe in the middle of that second tier, and then everybody else.
I'm trying to think if we're leaving anyone out. This is all.
I mean, this is all off the tops of our heads. We probably are, but is there anyone else really?
I mean, where is AC Milan?
I don't know yet. Hard to tell. Juventus are nowhere.
Well, no, they're
after
certainly
tonight.
Certainly not. I don't know. I would say that that's pretty accurate right now.
Yeah,
and I think then you get into the third tier and you could make a case for tons of teams. Dortmund.
And also I suppose we're forgetting a bit about Chelsea. Like we don't know what they'll be under Potter yet, but they certainly have the materials you would think if they can kind of get into his system, get into his flow. I mean, based on tonight, you wouldn't think it's going to happen, but...
Well, I'm not going to judge anything off of one Champions League match.
They have enough to go on a run.
You would think. It's a very expensive squad with some unbelievably talented players. So, if they play up to their capabilities and he finds the system that works for those guys, then sure.
I think, if just to circle back to this game, I don't know about either team. I saw problems for both.
Okay.
I think Bayern as a unit are better equipped. Would I say that Nagelsmann, although he is younger than Xavi, in terms of his acumen and his tactical nous, might be ahead of him? Certainly, he's ahead of him.
He's more experienced.
Way more experienced. So, yeah. In that sense, I think Bayern will probably over the long term. But I did see so much. There's kind of a lot of flair to the Barca side, which is exciting too.
Yeah. Let's go to one of those tier two teams that you just mentioned.
Before we do, just a quick one. Nagelsmann on Sadio Mane. I thought this was interesting. He put in so much for Liverpool. This is a worrying start to a comment. He's a new signing. He just needs to adapt. He was trying. I'm certain he will succeed for us. Mane, he didn't get a single shot against Barcelona. And his goal drought is four games now. Just a comment. He put in so much for Liverpool. Like, is he still working out the fatigue of being at Anfield? Which is a concerning thing for any manager
to
say.
Look, you can take the player out of Liverpool, but can you take Liverpool out of the player? Like everybody else on that Liverpool team that we've talked about, they look tired to start the season. Well, he was one of them. Just because he went somewhere else doesn't mean that he doesn't feel the things that they're feeling.
Right. The miles in your legs don't change.
Right.
As I know well, Andrew.
The roads you've traveled.
Oh, the crumbling old man.
Well, let's talk about Liverpool
now.
Yeah,
let's do that.
They get a really much needed win. I think this was a big morale boost for a club that was maybe being rocked a little bit in a way that they haven't been over. Well, I guess they did lose a Champions League final.
No, you're right. There was an intensity to this performance that hadn't been there before, and you just needed a good start. So when Salah scores, I was really nervous. I texted a friend of mine, Jared, and I said, Ajax isn't the team you want to be playing in this scenario. No. Although you are at home, I thought Ajax were a little bit underwhelming at times in the game, and they did settle into the game and became more dangerous. But as it went on, but I thought Liverpool started well. There was good intensity, and then when Ajax equalise, you're really, really concerned. And it was such a brilliant goal as well. Like, it really was. And it came down that left-hand side again, or rather the right-hand side of Liverpool's defence.
So I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, we need to, because I've been sidestepping the question for so long. And our listeners want us to talk about TAA.
I don't want to make this... Look, Liverpool won, and they did so in dramatic fashion, and they needed 3 points coming off of what happened to them against Napoli last week. Klopp called it their worst performance ever, so this was important. This was very important for them. They needed to win this game. And so it's a good night. If you were at Anfield that night, if you were in a bar watching, you should go home happy. But the Trent thing...
Yeah.
It's
every week now.
He is now, I was going to say quietly. It's not quietly. He's putting together a highlight reel of defensive lapses this season that are embarrassing.
But can I talk to you about those lapses, though? Because that's what they are. Sometimes, obviously, the player will beat him for pace down the line, or it'll be a bit of skill. But it's mostly...
He shuts off.
Right. He stops.
What is that?
Some of it, I think, is... Some of it maybe just like jadedness, tiredness. Some of it is expecting that midfield cover that's not there. Henderson's not playing. Fabinho's lost a step. Or I won't say he's lost a step. We'll say he's tired too, fatigued too. And that he's not reading it himself. He's not doing the defensive work he should be doing. But I just, like last night actually, he apart from the goal where he definitely is a part of that lead up, there's just no getting around it. His lapse is key to that goal going in. But I thought he did okay defensively last night. He did some good moments. So it's not a case of that he can't do it. It's just that he's literally not doing it. Now, I can't explain that. Like, is it because he's occupying the space so high up the field or so central in midfield at sometimes that running back into right back and then switching on into the defensive mode is now just becoming this dual life he's leading, Andrew? This life is an attacker and this life is a defender. It's too much for him now. He can't do both.
I don't know. I just have a hard time buying that. I don't think it's physical. These are mental lapses.
Right.
Like, there's no
but
other way to say
it. But that comes from fatigue too. You can be mentally fatigued, jaded.
I guess so.
Psychologically.
Maybe that's what it is. I'm watching this. And God, he does things that are so brilliant that there are only, you know, a few other guys in the league that, in terms of the consistency with which he does them, the delivery that he has, his ability to pass, there's not a lot of guys who can bring that to a team. But I'm watching these defensive lapses, and I keep thinking to myself, he is so good. But like, if Gareth Southgate is watching this, can he trust this guy
why would you pick him apart from his attacking acumen when you could have Reece James in there?
Right.
And so it brings on the next conversation, which comes up kind of regularly amongst our listeners online, and they often say to me, why don't you just play him in midfield? He's such a good passer. He's so good on the ball. I cannot tell you how much a regular midfield spot, like in there as in a two or a three, is so utterly different to anything he's being asked to do now. Like, you have to... It's like spinning plates playing in there. And we'll get to someone who can do it, is Thiago Alcantara. But you are just trying to balance everything positionally. You need to be... When you're thinking about receiving with your back to goal, has he the technique to get out of tight areas? Has he that kind of prescient. Not we know he's got the longer range passes, mm-hmm. but the little tidy passes that keep things moving. I think he's a brilliant player. But going into midfield, it just asks so much more of you. And that's why it's the toughest. Central midfield is the toughest position to play on the field. So by a mile.
He feels to me like more of a width player.
Right.
And I don't know if you want to bring him in Klopp's system, if you want to bring him inside, are you taking away some of the things that make him great? Unless yeah. Klopp is willing to change in some way, which I don't know that he would be.
But technically, you look at Pirlo, Scholes, I don't even include Lampard and Gerrard in this because I think they were at their best as almost auxiliary strikers coming from deep. But like the true midfielders, Roy Keane, the workload, the positioning, the recognizing space, receiving with your back to goal, being in tight areas, all that. I have no proof or no clue that he can do that. And I think if Klopp thought he could do that, wouldn't he have done it already?
Yeah, you would think so. Look, he would not be the first player. Gareth Bale started out as a fullback, you know, and he moved up midfield, forward,
he did,
central attacker. Like,
he did central attacker, but I actually think the move from fullback to striker is not as gigantic a leap as from fullback to center mid.
Oh, it's interesting.
It's like everything is going on and you have to be on top of it. It's such a pressurized position. It's not for everyone. And I don't think it's for him.
Well, nevertheless, a good win for Liverpool.
Definitely.
A badly needed win.
Definitely. And just to speak about Thiago, his intensity, his ability to win the ball, the passes he can play, Andrew, mm-hmm. Very, very important. And I wish that between all games, he's like wrapped up in some kind of hyperbolic chamber where nobody can touch him and he never grows old.
I was a little surprised to see that Joel Matip hadn't scored in the Champions League since he was with Schalke in 2013, I think was the stat.
Was that it?
Incredible.
Yeah.
He's played in, I mean, look, I know he's a center back. By the way, it felt like that position was generating a lot of Liverpool's chances. Van Dijk had a bunch, and then Matip, of course, had the winner.
I will say, I don't think Liverpool got better when Darwin Nunez came on, which is another concern for me down the line. And I mean, maybe you could say the same with Bobby Firmino, but, you know, they grabbed that one out of the fire. It was good to win it, but they probably should have been in a stronger position. They shouldn't have had to win it so late, but who cares? It's one of those that lifts the spirits,
of course.
I hope.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Let's one more from yesterday, then we'll switch to some of the marquee fixtures from earlier today. And Tottenham go to Portugal. They lose 2-0 to Sporting Lisbon.
Yeah, so I only saw highlights. The highlights I saw were of brilliant flowing Sporting Lisbon attacks, not Tottenham attacks. Why are Tottenham so bad, but like this is only their first defeat of the season?
Yeah, I know. It's very strange.
What is going on there?
So, well, first, your first point, in terms of the game itself, I actually thought that it was like a good game. I thought Tottenham were in this one. They had chances too, but Lisbon certainly had a lot of chances themselves. And I wouldn't say if Tottenham had eked a winner, I wouldn't have said that was wrong. Lisbon eking the winner, getting two in the 90th and 93rd, that's not necessarily wrong either. It was one of those games. It was a good game. Why is Tottenham not clicking? What a question.
Yeah.
I wish there was an easy answer. So here is the... here's the low-hanging fruit answer.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's just right now it feels like the easy answer to that question. Heung-min Son is not playing well. He was a share of the golden boot last year. He was vital to Tottenham's attack. He is, when right, one of the most dangerous players in the league. He is not that right now. Now, he's had moments. He drew the red card in the Premier League, what was that, a week and a half ago, which was an important moment, but he is not generating opportunities. He's not putting his chances on net. He's not scoring goals. He's not really generating assists. And Conte, again, not saying he's wrong. I don't know what the right answer is. I think he knows what Son brings when Son is right. And I think he believes the only way Son gets right is to keep playing. Now, meanwhile, Richarlison, in his cameo appearances off the bench, was playing too well to keep him chained to the sidelines. He has to play. So he has now entered the starting lineup. Conte doesn't want to take Son out. They've chosen to take Kulusevski out. I don't know that they can keep doing that. He had done nothing to warrant losing his place in the first 11. Right. And in the games where he's come on as a sub in all of these games, but he's come on as a sub in his last three. And when he comes on, you feel a difference. He brings something different. He's a great passer on the wing. He doesn't have the speed necessarily of the other guys up front. I don't know that Conte can keep doing this. I respect what he's doing, trying to give Son every opportunity to play his way out of this slump. Conte clearly loves the guy. Why shouldn't he? Son was a huge reason why Conte's in the Champions League right now this season with Tottenham. But I don't know if he can keep giving him this amount of opportunity that you are starting no matter what. I don't know that he can keep doing that. It's not helping right now.
One quick one, because again, didn't really see it, saw highlights. The midfield, like Bentancur and Højbjerg, is there more needed there?
So I love those two. Now, right. I don't know that they were at their best yesterday.
Right.
But if I'm listing my issues with the team right now, other Tottenham fans may disagree, but I think that those two, sometimes Bentancur, I've heard this said about him on, The View from the Lane podcast? I think they talk about it sometimes, where it feels like it sometimes takes him a bit to get into a game.
Okay.
But boy, when he's right, oh my goodness, the things that he can do on the ball, or the way he holds possession, I really like him a lot as a player. And I mean, Højbjerg is just solid as can be. Like, I just think that he's been good. He's contributed goals this season too, important goals. So that's not really where my problems lie. Look, they've had a couple defensive lapses here and there, and their attack is just not humming. Part of that is Conte. Like, look, he's brilliant, but like, I think sometimes the way that he wants to win, it's not always going to look pretty. So even when Tottenham, like, he may think that they are playing well in some of these games, yeah, where to us they haven't been, because we see Kane and Son, Richarlison, Kulusevski. Why isn't this humming? Why doesn't this look better? Conte is willing to cede possession. He's not trying to control 60% of the ball. He's willing to score on the counter and set up defensively. I'm not saying it's Mourinho ball. It's not to that level. But like, he's not trying to win the possession game. He's willing to let the other team have it. And so it's not, you know, when you're going to play that way and you're not going to get a ton of opportunities, you got to score on the counter and take advantage of the chances you have. And that's how it's going to look right now. So it may never look as pretty as what we think it could, given the talent that they have. The other thing I wanted to ask you about from this game. So Marcus Edwards.
I was just about to bring him up. I was going to say there was one Tottenham product that played really well.
This is a fascinating conversation. It is one of those conversations that, again, we could sit down one day during a summer when there's not a lot going on and have a whole conversation about how the big clubs decide to utilize their youth systems.
Yep.
Marcus Edwards was a Tottenham product from age 8 to age 20. Maurizio Pochettino, I think when Marcus Edwards was 16 or 17 years old, referred to him not necessarily as the next, but he compared him to Lionel Messi.
Oh, he was, if Tottenham were a German team, he would be a wunderkind.
Correct. And so this is a player that was firmly in the minds of Tottenham supporters for years.
Yeah.
He was always supposed to be the next one. Hmm. And it just, for whatever reason, maybe it was Pochettino left, new management came in, didn't work. I don't know. I'm trying to remember when he left in relation to when all that went down. But at any rate, it just fizzled. And he was released from his contract, went to one club, wound up at Sporting Lisbon. And lo and behold, he now has this opportunity to go against this team that raised him and show them what they're missing out on. And he was spectacular. He was spectacular.
So he left Tottenham
at age 20. He's 23 now.
Yeah, well, he had two loan spells at Norwich City. He only played once at Norwich and then Excelsior, which is in the Eredivisie. And he had 25 appearances there. And he left Tottenham and went to Vitória. Yeah, and had 77 appearances and 23 goals.
Yeah.
Now, I heard, I think it was Rory Smith talk about him. And Rory Smith made the point that he regularly makes. People develop at different times, at different eras.
It's not always linear.
No, it's not always linear. And 23 is still, it's elderly in terms of a youth player. It's elderly youth in professional soccer, but it's about the right time you want to be peaking. And the opportunities at English clubs are infinitesimally smaller than they used to be back say 20, 25 years ago. And it's such a dogfight to get your position. Mm-hmm. And maybe it wasn't the right environment. Maybe the style of play at Tottenham wasn't what he needed. And now he's with a very good coach at Sporting Lisbon. He's experienced football in a different league. Maybe he's more relaxed about the game, about his life, about where things are heading.
I could certainly, off the field stuff could be part of it. I've heard them say that, you know, it took him a little while to acclimate to Portuguese football and Portuguese life. So, you know, who knows? Look, you're right. Here's the thing. Like, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, God.
I know, but can't do
but
that.
But then I'm sort of like, well, wait a minute. Okay, like, it's easy to say that now. And it's easy to get on the club in these situations. We do it a lot with Chelsea. They've got young players all over the world, and we're thinking, you know, they let De Bruyne go. They let Salah go. And, like, look at those guys now. And so it's easy to do that. But, okay, let's say Tottenham, that he stays. Tottenham are not – they're not a club where they're going to allow you right now to kind of learn on the fly. Like, that's not what they're going for. They're trying to win trophies. Insert your jokes here, but that's what that's the echelon they're in. They think they should be winning trophies. They're trying to qualify for Champions League. So you can say, let's keep this guy and let's allow this then 20-year-old to kind of bed in with our first team. He needed regular minutes, and that's why he left, because he wanted that. He went to them and said, I need to be playing regularly. So what are Tottenham supposed to do? Force him into a squad where he's not ready to play, where they have players that are better than him? I mean, look, if they do that, are they in the Champions League right now? Do they go out and get a Kulusevski, who was a huge reason why they qualified?
I would note as well, I'm just looking. So Mourinho came in 2019, and Edwards left in 2019.
Probably had something to do with it.
I think Edwards is only 5'6" or something.
He's small. He's really quick.
Now, Mourinho is not going to want a guy who's 5'6", generally speaking.
So, I mean... Look, it's a tough one because you look at Tottenham now and you think, okay, well, they just spent like $60 million on Richarlison. If they have Marcus Edwards, is that happening?
But you can't do that. That's like Arsenal fans. Arsenal fans could do the same going back further with Harry Kane. They could go down the same line with that.
A lot of teams could do that with him.
Right, but it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and so it's a tough call. I don't know.
I think it's cool to see him go abroad and do as well as he's doing.
Now, there is one silver lining for Tottenham with this. So even through his transfer from Vitória to Sporting Lisbon, Tottenham still retained 50% sell-on rights. That clause was transferred. Tottenham could have cashed in on that move then. They said, no, we want that 50% to travel with him to Sporting. He has a £52 million or euro release clause. Tottenham could still earn $26 million potentially if that release clause is active.
Utterly grim way of looking at it.
They could still make a lot of money.
It's good for Daniel Levy. Great. But yeah.
That's good business, my friend.
Yeah, I know. But
what are you mad about it?
It's not for the...
Sorry. Is this bothering the Liverpool side of
old
you?
Old capitalist Andy.
It's good business. No, that's very shrewd.
Yeah, the romance shrivels suddenly under the weight of Andy's contractual law there.
Very shrewd business. But good for him. I was equal parts frustrated and happy for him watching that go down. He had a run in that game.
He had a couple of runs.
It's almost enough. I didn't want him to score. But like...
If we're going down, I want Marcus to score.
But like it was such... What he did was so good that it deserved a goal at the end of it. And it was a great save from Lloris. But yeah, Tottenham, I don't know. Still just... Something's amiss.
It's exciting for me to see which way it goes, either down or it starts to pick up. Either way, we got some content.
It's very interesting. Let's go to a few of today's matches,
right,
JJ.
Let's do that.
Let's start with Chelsea. Graham Potter making his debut. What a place to make it in the Champions League.
Yeah.
He got a haircut. Like, he looked ready for this moment, I thought. Didn't he have like a fade kind of? Like, it was like, what? Okay, I'm in the big time now.
It was a bit sharper, but the beard was still pretty much kind of...
I didn't say a beard trim. I said anything.
He still looks like a sessions musician in the National. You could see him upstairs with the up on stage with the bass in the National. The bassist in the National is hurt. Graham Potter goes in. He had his suit and tie on for the Queen. He talked himself into a bit of a hole pre-game. So he said he'd never even been to a Champions League game prior to this. Like, and then afterwards he said, oh yeah, I think I have been. As if someone said to him, you shouldn't have said that you've never been to a Champions League game.
And what's the harm of saying that? Who cares?
I suppose.
I mean, look, he managed in the Europa League. Arsenal at the Emirates.
To me, it means nothing.
Like, I don't know.
It's all about what's said online, Andrew, and the things that are said. Like, manager hasn't even, you know, been to a Champions League game, never mind managed a team in it, that kind of thing. But,
people think that matters.
Nah, it's just one of those things. The result tonight, you know, it was a really good goal from Raheem Sterling, but the defending for the equaliser was... Okafor's equaliser was not good. Not good at all. Thiago Silva falling over, I think it was, in the left-hand channel, pulled out of the centre. But look, it's not the result he wants, but it's a nice dampening of expectations. let's just bring the temperature down a little bit. But I think if he's left alone, we've seen what he can do at Brighton. It'll be interesting to see how he deals with stars of a different level. Mm-hmm. He'll have a disciple in Cucurella already there, mm-hmm. so that surely will be helpful. But he's been given a 5-year contract, and that's the key thing for me. This is long-term Chelsea, which we've hardly ever seen.
Yeah, and well, I mean, yeah, certainly different ownership are going
to
bring.
So they want him to build
different philosophy.
Todd and the guys, Hank Scorpio and the guys, want him to build something. So, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's a disappointing night overall for Chelsea. Would have liked to have gotten 3 points at home against Salzburg. That's got to be 3 points.
The Salzburg fans, there was a video going around. Henry Winter took the video that they silently marched from the station to the train station. They were all getting to go to Chelsea to the ground in silence for the Queen.
Really?
That's the Salzburg fans did that. And they had a banner in the ground and it said, in honour of Queen Elizabeth II.
Really?
Which...
This is a far cry from the way the Bayern fans handled it.
No, the Bayern fans were upset because of how the... Yeah, the Bayern fans went big saying the disruption to ordinary fans over the death of a royal. What is this? But then again, Salzburg in Austria, I mean, you've got the Habsburg dynasty, and Queen Elizabeth II was directly related to the Habsburgs.
Oh, okay, well, there you go.
I mean, are RB Salzburg football fans thinking about...
Evidently.
Decaying European dynasties.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
That was...
It's a lot of respect.
Yeah.
Huge amount of respect.
Yeah, wow. Let's see. I don't have any more on that. I don't know if you do before I move on.
No, not really.
All right, well then let's go to the Etihad.
The City of Manchester Stadium.
Manchester City and Borussia Dortmund. Fun game. City come from behind.
No, hang on a second.
Right. My apologies, everyone. It was...
The second half was definitely fun. We saw fun things. The first half was so bad that I was going to switch... to Rangers and Napoli and watch James Sands implode and make sure he definitely isn't in anything to do with the World Cup. I mean, he's had the worst 3-game run of anyone.
It's bad timing. He was sent off, right?
Sent off for just bad foul. And Napoli missed the penalty and then missed the retaken penalty. Even though one of their players was the one that encroached. You shouldn't get to take the penalty again if that's the case. Anywho, back to this game. So yeah, it was such a dreadful first half that I was so glad that the second half had lots of good things.
Well, fortunately for you, the game is 90 minutes. And City, as they do so many times, they find a way. I mean, you talk about a blitz. Sometimes when they just decide that, okay, we win now.
Well, Royce set up Jude Bellingham, who had an amazing game, to put Borussia Dortmund 1-0 up, and immediately Pep Guardiola goes, right, and he makes a triple substitution, and one of them, Jack Grealish is standing there with his back to the board, and he's like, not me, and he looks over, oh, it's me, I'm one of them. Grealish out. That's a conversation for another day, but he brings in Foden, who I actually thought played really well when he came in, and it's like, yeah, we got to get serious here, and get serious they did. John Stones had an absolute rocket, which he hit it perfectly well, but Mayer, the Borussia Dortmund goalkeeper, is not a top-class goalkeeper. He spent most of his time in Bundesliga 2.
I mean, that ball seemed like it was past him before he even understood what was happening. He was clearly not expecting that. By the way, I don't think anybody could have been. That was unbelievable. John Stones he's going to go back and watch that and think, I did that?
Yeah. It was a bit like the company goal against Leicester.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, yeah.
And then Cancelo, with the outside of his boot, just into Erling Haaland, who throws his legs, hurls his lower body at the ball, in the air, catches the outside of his left boot and flies into the net for a goal I think people are going to be talking about for a long time to come. And that's 13 goals in just 1 month for him. It's monstrous. Monstrous.
What have we done?
What? Borussia Dortmund, there's a scientist who put him together from...
He was put together long before Borussia Dortmund.
Well, that's true, actually. Yeah. Yeah. You forget about that.
Might have been the Habsburgs.
He's a Habsburg. Unbelievable. And I remember his father. And I know what your father did doesn't mean that's what you are. There's a whole other genetic mix going on in there.
But it astounds me when that happens, though.
But his father was such a plodding.
I sometimes think about, look.
Basic midfielder.
I sometimes think about it, look, Del Curry was a fine NBA player.
Right.
But, Steph is, top 10 all time.
I know.
Huh? You did this?
Haaland, Alf Inge Haaland had a fine Premier League career in the mid-90s, early 2000s. Just fine. Nothing wrong with it. But it was never, there was no inclination that the fruit of his loins was going to be scoring these absurd goal records and goals. It's just...
He's outrageous. He is spectacular. I will say, as his, as his profile continues to grow, one good thing that has emerged from this, I mean, some of the videos you see on Twitter of people kind of imitating his run, they're all funny to me.
You sent me one. They are
They're
good.
All funny to me.
They are pretty
Keep
good.
Them coming. They're all great.
Yeah. His kind of hunched over run.
Oh, yeah. But it's very, every motion is hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. it is. It's there was one guy who really looked like Haaland. You sent me the video?
Yeah.
And he did look like Haaland.
He was running through the streets,
yeah,
right?
Just run in full kit.
Yeah.
But there was no ball. He was just running, which made it even funnier.
They're all funny.
Yeah.
On that goal, I mean, look, obviously, I was at first when I watched it, I was like, okay, what do I like more there, the assist or the goal? In the end, it has to be the goal because it's just the kind of goal that you don't see very often. But
the
I don't want Cancelo's work on that to be forgotten.
Is there anything more sexually attractive in football than an outside of the foot pass? Like, it really is. It's got a level of almost
good question.
Sex appeal to it. Like, it's really, really... Is it the sexiest pass you can pull off?
Outside of the boot.
Like, I know it's not the most skillful, but it's still very skilled. I think it's the most.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't fight you on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please let us know @CEOSoccerPod on Twitter, Caught Offside ESPN. What's your sexiest pass?
Bizarre moment at the end of this game, by the way, when Pep was with authority handed a yellow, and it almost looked like he appreciated it. I don't know what the conversation was between him and the official.
The yellow was so good.
But it was very funny. The official couldn't wait to give it to him. Yeah. He was so proud.
Was he just in his ear all game? And you're just,
yeah, or afterwards, I don't know what it was.
How good a feeling is it to for a referee to ultimately send Jesse Marsh to the stands? You know, guys like him who just don't stop all game.
Yeah.
It's got to be a good feeling. And I'd say Pep is no different.
Certainly, no. He is quite the chatty Cathy. And then finally, wanted to get to Real Madrid and RB Leipzig. Props to Carlo Ancelotti, second head coach of all time to win 100 Champions League matches. Do you know who the other is?
Second to win 100 Champions League matches. Ooh, 100 Champions League. Sir Alex Ferguson?
That's right. And I would say Carlo is going to pass him any week now. That's 100 for Carlo, 102 for Sir Alex.
Okay. Very good.
I'd like to see the full list. I mean, Pep can't be that far off, no? Am I underestimating how many years it takes to get to that number?
Well, think of it. You only play... Well, not really. So if you're doing it for 10... If you're in the Champions League every year for 10 years you get to the semi-final every year, how many games is that? So you have 4 group games. It's 6-7 games, depending. Sir Alex did have the extra group stage, though.
Oh. Oh, my God.
His numbers have been padded.
There should be an asterisk. There should be an asterisk. There's a conversation I wanted to have out of this one that we have never had before, and I think it's time.
Uh-oh.
Can we have a conversation about Federico Valverde? Because I feel like if all the world's talent in this sport was the stock market, and the goal is to buy low and sell high. Now, buy low. I mean, he's a star on Real Madrid.
Right.
But I feel like sometimes when I'm watching him, my instinct is to say that. That's the next superstar in the sport. Now, again, he's not that young. He's 24.
He is 24.
But, I mean, the goal he scored today was great. We spoke last week about the assist that he had to Vinicius, where, what was it you said? Vinicius isn't even in the screen, and Valverde's playing the ball.
Oh,
he knows.
The ball was so good.
He's a brilliant player. Fabrizio Romano tweeted today about Valverde. He said, man of the match, pure leadership, one of Ancelotti's favorites. Never been discussed on the market last August, despite Premier League club rumors. He's simply untouchable. Real Madrid, Fede Valverde, what a player. Signed for 5 million euros. That was it.
There is I mean, you can't, obviously, these websites, you can't trust them. But if you're to do a quick Google, Anfield Central, Liverpool were ready to complete a 100 million euro transfer on deadline day with a bid made in the dying... in the dying offers of the window. I don't believe that. So Liverpool were going to splash out almost 200 million, if you include the add-ons for Darwin Nunes, yeah, on two players.
And look, I'm not trying to portray it like I've uncovered some great secret here. Like,
I know,
we
but
all
he's
know
not. He's not spoken
he's
about
not.
In the same reverential tones as so many other players.
And he's
and, I
and maybe
that.
He's not there yet, but he's. But he's close. But he's getting there.
Well, Modric has 12 years on him and he's running around like he's a boy. Yeah. So I guess he does kind of suck in a lot of interest. But Valverde, he is class. Absolute class.
He really is. And then Asensio came on, scored a really nice goal in this one as well. Curled it off the far post. It was a nice win for Real Madrid. And I would say that they, I mean, I guess as expected.
That's two wins now for them.
And Leipzig trying to get that new manager bounce, I guess, the way Chelsea was, and it didn't quite go that way.
Two tricky games to start off with, Celtic away, and then you have Leipzig, and they've come through it, and they've done their business, and like they're almost there. Once you win your first two games, you're really almost there. Before we get out of the Champions League stuff, Andrew, I just want to mention Maccabi Haifa giving PSG a bit of a scare. And Maccabi's goal to go ahead was really great goal from Cherry. It was a super move. But PSG prevailed, as they probably should, and let's all laugh at Juventus.
Real quick, one thing on PSG. I don't know if you saw this, but kind of a fun moment before the match. I mean, sometimes like just the power of what it is to be Leo Messi. Like, you think of some of the players on that team. You got Neymar, Mbappe. These are true giants of the sport. And as the players are walking out onto the field for like the anthem to play, the Champions League anthem to play, and all that. Like, you know how there's kids that are like always,
mascots.
Yeah, I guess that's what, for me, mascot
means a guy dressed up as a...
Right, I have a hard time referring to just a child as, look at that mascot over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess in soccer, that we call them mascots. Okay, fine. But like, all these great players are walking by and the kids all like break formation and are in utter awe of when Messi walks by.
I know, it's godlike.
They leave their posts to all go hug him.
But you imagine being 6 or 7 and seeing, or 8 or 9 even.
Yeah. By the way, if he walked in here right now, how would you react? I would get up and hug him.
I'd be in awe.
Yeah.
It'd take me a while to kind of get
a larger-than-life figure. He's like, that's not a real person. Yeah. And when you see him in front of you, it's like, oh my God, that's it. There he is.
Yes.
As if to be a kid.
Seeing him in the flesh would be a bit one of those gawping moments.
Now, we should say that after whatever it was last year, we talked about this a little bit last week, he's having a real good season again. And I'm excited about that because I love him and I want to see where this goes.
I know. I mean, ultimately, you fundamentally believe in the power of just having really good players in your team. You've always said that.
Not a novel idea to say talent matters.
You believe it trumps any kind of tactics and any kind of...
I don't know that I've said that.
You have said that. I mean, that's basically...
I don't know that
you're communicating.
I've said that.
So that's what you want. It was kind of... that star power that you see. I mean, I guess if you're a kid living in Israel, what's the chances you're ever going to see him there? And when you do, it bowls you over. Juventus Benfica, hilarious. It's just so funny.
What about it exactly?
Well, first of all, Benfica, you know, they're a good side. They're a decent side and a side with amazing history. But they're the kind of side that Juventus, in their Super League planning and machinations, they would have no time for. And yet here they are getting beaten at home by them. Just lovely. João Mário and David Neres with the goals, and Arduís Milik, he scored the opener. They led after 4 minutes, and then it all went crashing down, which is just hilarious to me. Sorry, Juventus fans, it is. I don't. Wow. I have nothing against the club per se. It's the people who run it and the things they want.
Well, then they're probably one of several clubs that I would think you detest for those reasons.
Including my own.
Wow. What a comment. Yeah. By the way, I should say, in a losing effort, Orsic scored again for Dinamo Zagreb.
That guy. Just sign him. Someone sign him so we can watch him week in,
week
out.
But they did lose 3-1 to AC Milan. Worth mentioning. That's about all I got on the Champions League. We'll go ahead, we'll take a break, we'll come back, and we'll take a look at the latest squad. The USMNT, the roster is out. We will share our thoughts. That is next. More Caught Offside still to come. Oh, back now on Caught Offside on a busy soccer night here in the United States. MLS action, Campeones Cup going on. It's right in front of us right now. We could be doing one of our live reaction pods right now if we wanted to. NYCFC are up at the moment.
Is that Hebert?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Socks down, being walked to the sideline by the physio.
And what looks to be a pretty crowded Yankee Stadium tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Here in the
city. In fairness, this game was promoted pretty hard on. Mm-hmm. You couldn't log on to YouTube without seeing an advert for it. So
yeah,
good to see a crowd there.
Yeah. All right. USMNT squad is announced for the final dress rehearsals before the World Cup, JJ.
Yep.
Thoughts.
Okay.
So many thoughts. So
How do you want to start?
Well,
now?
I want to start with the surprises, but not... I mean, for me, it's not as much about who is there, but more so about who isn't.
100% for me. The surprises are not who's involved. It's who is not going to be taking part.
So there's two names that I wanted to mention straight out. Jordan Pefok being the first one. Look, for any of you who have been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that this is a drum that I have been banging for quite a bit. I took very seriously his golden boot in the Swiss League, and some didn't. Okay, fair enough. He's now gone to the Bundesliga, and he's still scoring goals.
With the team that is currently top of the
Union
Bundesliga.
Union Berlin is top of the table right now, and he's putting in goals for him. Now, he had a little bit of an injury situation, but he's back, though. He played, I think, 75 minutes last week.
He has 2 goals, 2 assists across 5 games.
Yeah, and I think 3 goals total across all competitions. So, you know, maybe the injury has something to do with it. Greg didn't cite it, I don't believe, in the comments that I saw, but it shouldn't, because like I said, Pefok is back and he's playing. Here is what Greg said about it. He said, we know what Jordan can do. He's been great in the Bundesliga, and we just went with someone else in this camp. We didn't want to just give up on Pepe. So to hear Greg analyze it is to make you think, oh, well, they must really like Pefok. But if I were Jordan, it would still make me nervous. There's a lot of guys that Greg knows what they can do. He brought a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he knows what Paul Areola and Jordan Morris can do. You know what? I'm not even pretty sure. I'm certain of it.
To me, I looked at it and I said, oh, okay, well, like what it says to me is maybe Pefok, if the World Cup was tomorrow, maybe he's in the squad. But it feels to me when Greg makes a decision like that he's not settled with that decision and he's going to give other guys, namely in this case Ricardo Pepi, every opportunity to unseat that player. That's how I read it. And I could be wrong. Pefok might be a lock, and that's why Greg doesn't want to bring him. But everything that we've seen over the course of the last year tells us that he ain't a lock.
The aggregated evidence that, you know, the talk about verticality, all those things, suggest that he's not the kind of player he wants. He's just not the kind of center forward he wants. And I think... Pepe, he wants this kind of fluid front three. And I've said before, it's going to be about the system he wants to play and the personnel that fits that, rather than the guy, hey, look at him, he's scoring X amount of goals, we got to bring him. He's bringing Josh Sargent because Sargent fits more into that system, and you can't ignore his start to the season in the Championship. How many goals has he got? Was it?
Well, yeah, I was going to talk about him too.
All right, okay, well, we'll hold off there.
But
my point being is Pefok is just, he's just not what he wants. And, I mean, Greg's already told us tactically he isn't suited to what he wants to see. So,
yeah, Greg spoke at length today about what he expects tactically from that position. It's kind of long, but will you bear with me? Because I do think that it's important. Because
sure.
A lot of people, I think, We sit here. It's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, PFOC doesn't do, he doesn't fit what Berhalter wants, and then we move on to the next thing. But there's a lot of people out there asking, well, what does that actually mean? What is it that PFOC isn't doing? Because what I see right now is a number nine who's scoring a lot of goals. And that's something that the U.S. needs, because we're not scoring a ton of goals. So why? Why not him? Here's what Greg said at the press conference about it. He said, I think you've watched enough of our games to see how the striker is being used. It's no secret. We use them in a number of different ways. One of them is to drop in and help us, give us an extra man in midfield. One of the ways is to run behind the back line. And then arriving in the penalty box, making good runs inside the penalty box. And then finally, starting our defensive pressure. We want to be a high-pressing team. We need forwards that understand the press, know how to use triggers to initiate the press, and then actually execute the press well. When you look at a guy like Jesus, he checks all those boxes. I'll tell you right now, if the World Cup started today, like, we can sit here and say, oh, we don't know what the situation is with that number nine.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do. All right? Jesus Ferreira is starting if the World Cup was today. And so, I don't know, people might love that. People might hate that. I'm still in the middle on it. But I'm just telling you, start wrapping your minds around it.
Oh, yeah. And he's got, like, look at Hadji Wright as well. I mean, PFOC, I'm not saying PFOC and Hadji Wright are the same kind of player, but they're just not what Greg wants in that. In like I said a few months ago, don't get fixated on looking for this out and out number nine style. Forget about that. It's not going to be like that. You're more likely to see Weah play down the centre than you are PFOC.
Maybe.
That's the truth.
So now here's what you said, though, that kind of got me thinking. When this all started, the Berhalter era, it was always Sargent. It was always supposed to be him.
Mm.
His form forced Greg into other options. And we've spent basically the last 2 years kind of wandering through the desert trying to figure out who that guy is, because it hadn't been Sargent and he hadn't done anything to prove that it should be him. But now, here we are. Are we coming full circle once again? Because when Greg goes through his checklist of the things that he wants from that position, JJ, I can't help but think when I see some of them, you know, guys who can come in and help in the midfield, guys who will help initiate the press, guys who will make the runs into the penalty box. I just keep thinking, Sargent. He does all those things. And so while I sit here right now and I tell all of you, start wrapping your minds around Jesus Ferreira, by the way, Josh Sargent, he scored again today for Norwich City. He can't stop scoring right now. He's in the form, literally, of his life. The only thing that could unseat Ferreira right now, I think, is if Sargent's form continues, and I think we'll have come all the way back to where we were in the beginning, what Greg had always hoped would be the case, and Sargent as the guy playing that role.
Right, and also, think about this with Greg. It will be horses for courses. So if he sees a game, either Wales, Iran, or England, that requires a more physical approach, or a guy who links play a bit more like a traditional centre-forward, then that might be Josh Sargent in there. So he's the one that fits the bill for Greg, and in a way that just PFOC and say Hadji Wright or someone along those lines don't. Now, there was other omissions.
So there's one other one that I wanted to mention, but you can go if you have. I don't know if it's the same one.
Is it Tim Ream?
Yeah, it is.
So I thought, first of all, if you're thinking, why are they talking about Tim Ream? Well, first of all, he's had a brilliant start to the Premier League campaign with Fulham. He just has. We read the stats out before in terms of interceptions, how he led the league across the first two or three games, and just how he generally is playing well in a team that admittedly is playing well, period, throughout the side. Now, when you think of him playing for the last time he played for the US, which was it's well over a year ago now, he was playing at left back. He was not playing at centre back. And we saw him get skinned and he looked uncomfortable. It wasn't great. I think that kind of experience is vital on the bench to bring someone like him, to have a guy that can come in and play centre back. Greg had this to say today about him. Some of the things we're looking for in our centre backs is to play a high line, cover the space behind them, and be dominant in the air. That's not Tim's strength. So he's basically not going to be on the plane.
So Greg told you today that he's not coming.
He's like not coming.
Remove him from all conversation.
And I honestly think you can lock in the fact that we see Aaron Long in the squad again.
I think he's going.
He's going, and I think you can lock in that it's Zimmerman and Long.
I think so, too. The Tim Ream thing, because we have now been talking about this for a while,
It's a big call to say a Premier League defender is not good enough to make your,
I'm telling you, like,
your squad.
Again, this is not the reason. This is not like the reason to make a decision. But when the U.S. plays England, there, how many England fans are going to turn that on looking for Ream?
Oh, yeah. Well,
they're going to wonder, where is that guy? The reason I feel bad for Ream is, you can check me on this and tell me if there's another name out there. But like over the last year plus, basically from the start of last season in Europe to where we are right now, can you think, is there any other player who has kind of done more to try and put himself in position to get on this World Cup team than what Ream has done? Like, he was really off, he was totally off the radar. And then he started every game for Fulham last year, captain, leader,
yeah,
helped with their promotion, was a significant part of their promotion. And then in the Premier League, I mean, really, he's continued that form. Maybe there's been moments here or there. I know at Liverpool, against Liverpool, there was a talk that maybe he was at fault for one of the goals. But he's been really, really good this season. Greg talks about, you know, aerial, we're looking for somebody stronger. If you look at his metrics this year on aerial duels, they're actually really good, some of the best of his career. Maybe that won't hold up. Maybe that's an anomaly. I don't know. But so far, it's been really good. I don't know if I can think of another player who from a year plus ago to right now has done more to at least try to get himself. I mean, I guess you could say like a Brandon Vasquez, someone like that.
But do you not think it's just let's bring it back to basics. Do you not think it's not a risk. Let's go the other way. Let's look at the positive. If you have a player in your team who, we're going to be playing England and Wales, and I'm not saying they play similar styles. There is no one British style anymore. Mm. But here's a player who has experience against English and Welsh players and genuinely knows the culture of the game in the British Isles. Is it not a good idea to bring him with you? Especially when he's in good form. Like, if he can handle Premier League attacks, that's a good thing. Surely, I think you should bring him. I definitely think he should be involved in this squad. And
I mean, look, that the high line thing makes me a little bit nervous about him.
I'm not convinced by Aaron Long in a high line either.
And by the way, quietly, Walker Zimmerman's not having a great season right now either in MLS. Yeah, I don't know. That position is going to, you know, a high line against, you know, think about some of the players who are going to be running in behind that line. Bale, you know, Sterling.
I'd fancy most players in a foot race with Bale at the moment, though. You know, like, I think significantly.
He puts on that Welsh kid. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
We've seen what he's capable of.
Like, but I'm just saying, there seems to be, experience matters and it counts. And I'm not saying you have to start him, and I'm certainly don't start him in the position where he struggled at left back. But he does give you something, and I'm surprised. I'm a little bit surprised. The other thing as well for me was, like, Mark McKenzie seems to have fallen off the map altogether. He's had a good start to the season. And again, I'm not picking on Paul Arriola. I'm not picking on Jordan Morris. But like, Brandon Vasquez, if what Greg says is true and this isn't the final squad, why wouldn't you just bring one of them with you? Why wouldn't you bring Vasquez in, drop one of those boys and have the conversation and say, listen, you're part of my plans going forward. I just need to have a look and see what this guy can give us.
I mean, look, why wouldn't I get that, but he's trying to strike. It's a weird balance that he has to strike here. He has to get a look at some of these guys and make a decision. But by the same token, this is, like I said at the start of the segment, this is the last dress rehearsal. So he also has to, like, there haven't been a ton of opportunities for this group to play together. There have been guys injured at major tournaments and qualifying. Things have been shuffled. There's guys injured now.
You're not going to have Anthony Robinson. You're not going to have Stefan. No. You're not going to have those guys.
But I'm saying he also has to be developing his team.
But the team, so pick 10 to 11 of your regular guys, neither of which, like Arriola and Morris, we do not expect to start any games in this World Cup, I wouldn't think. I don't anyway.
No.
I would see them as bench players, guys coming off the bench, if even that, with the options he's got. So why would you not just say to one of them, you're in my plans, you're not coming to the camp, have your 10 players that are your, or as much as you possibly can, have your guys that are going to start at the World Cup or that are in your mind for starting positions, and then put Vasquez in there and see how he gels with them. There's nothing wrong with that in my view.
Yeah,
he's not doing it is concerning. On the other side of things, for Greg though, it does seem to be, you know, with Pepe, I'm trying to play him into form. You know, I'm trying to get him in to a kind of, because he believes he can be productive and he feels as if he can kickstart him. So that's why he's
I mean, clearly, again, going back to the comments from Greg, Greg wouldn't be doing this if Pepe wasn't a player that Greg thought checks the boxes that he wants checked.
I would say the same goes for Luca Della Torre, who has had 11 minutes with Celta Vigo so far.
Yeah.
11 minutes.
My comments on that transfer are not aging well.
Jesus. Like, so I think Luca Della Torre, regardless of what he plays now, is going to the World Cup. I think he's...
I mean, I love that guy.
I think he's punched his ticket because... But, like, he's definitely in the squad and involved over looking at another option because he can get minutes and get time because he can't get it with his club right now. And that's definitely in Greg's mind.
Last thing from me on this... in terms, you know, the positions of worry, obviously we've talked about the striker position, center back position. Those are two of the big ones. But before we got out, I at least wanted to mention something about the goalkeeper position because we were worried about it before. Players changed teams. Things were happening during the transfer window. Now guys are settled. They're in with their clubs. And it is not going great. This, I mean, in my life as a U.S. soccer fan, it's never been like this where I have felt this unsettled about that position. There's always been a lockdown number one. Hell, oftentimes there's been two or three of them at any given moment. This is weird right now. Stefan's hurt, and when he's playing, it's not going great. Turner just had his first competitive match for Arsenal. It was fine.
Just go back to Stefan. Stefan was available last night for Middlesbrough. They lost 3-2 to Cardiff, but he wasn't included in the squad.
If you're him right now, if you're Stefan, are you worried about your place in this team?
No.
If the world...
He'll have natural worries. I'm convinced that he's Greg's number one anyway.
Number one?
Yeah.
I think it's Turner. I think it had... Look, ultimately, I know that there's things that you want out of your goalkeeper in this day and age, and one of them is to play with your, you know, be well with your feet, with the ball at your feet. But, like, in a World Cup setting, like, I'll take the guy who's the best shot stopper. And to me, it's not close. Like, I think Matt Turner is clearly that guy.
He's the best goalkeeper for me, and he would be the one I'd start.
So if the flaw with Turner is, you know, he's not as good with the ball at his feet as what Stefan might be, you know what? I don't care. I'm not taking my chances with a guy who I don't trust to keep the ball out of the net the same way I do with Turner. And if that means the U.S. has to play a slightly different way, maybe not playing out from the back quite as much, maybe he's bombing the ball downfield and not taking chances with passes to his center backs, then fine. I'll live with that. I'll live with that. I'll take the best shot stopper at the World Cup.
I would tend to agree with you too. It's just
it's going to be interesting.
Apparently, the wages he's on at Middlesbrough as well. There was all sorts of rumors flying around on the internet that City had said when he's fit, we want you. Now you can't compel Chris Wilder to start him. You just can't do that. But now he's lost his place. Or it seems as if he's lost his place to a keeper that was playing in League Two last season. Not good.
It's weird. It's weird. Doesn't mean these guys can't, that they're not good. I know Matt Turner's good.
I like Matt Turner. I think he's a good goalkeeper. I do not think Stefan is I never thought Stefan was. I've been a Stefan skeptic for a long time.
You have. That's true. And Turner would be my choice right now. And I think even with what you say about Berhalter's love for Stefan, I think it's going to be Turner. I do. But who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, we have no idea. I can't wait for these games to happen, even these rehearsals coming up. Japan and
you're an excited boy, aren't you?
I mean, God, when this World Cup, when it's over, what happens then?
Life.
What do I
do? Happens. What do you mean when it's over? It hasn't even begun. You get excited, get hyped for it.
I'm too excited. That's the problem. I'm so excited for this event to take place that I've already looked past it at how I'm going to feel when it's finished.
It's always half glass, glass half empty with you. Isn't it really, though? Be truthful with me now. When you
I'm
see
worried
something,
about this being over when and, you see and what I'm going to do.
When you see a point of joy, you think about what happens when the joy is gone.
I oftentimes am like that. Yeah. Wow. I need to work on, what do they call that, being present? I guess.
Yeah.
I've got to work on that.
Yeah, the moment they call it, don't they?
Yeah. I got to work on that.
Does your wife ever say to you, Andrew, can you just be present?
No, she's never said that to me. By the way, she's like that too. I think she has some of that as well.
What would you do?
Always kind of like looking at the next thing.
If she said to you, could you be present with me right now, what would you say? You just laugh.
I mean, okay. to have someone say that to you in a moment of seriousness. Be present with me. Like I'm sorry. I need to take a walk around the block and gather myself after that. Let's take a walk ourselves right now. We'll come back. We'll wrap up. You got a nice mailbag here. Quick, kind of a brief what to watch for. Remember, we used to do that every single week on this podcast?
Yeah, it was a burden.
It was a burden. We would be previewing games that we had no interest in, just out of some sort of obligation to nothing. No one told us to do it. Anyway, we'll be right back. More Caught Offside still to come.
Oh, God.
Oh, back again. You're on Caught Offside on a Wednesday night in New York City, the Upper West Side.
Yeah, beautiful breeze out there. Mm. You got that kind of warm yet a little bit cooler. There's the hint of fall in the air.
There we go.
But people look still with that summer glow, walking down the street, walking towards life with purpose.
They sure are. Quick look ahead to the weekend.
They sure are. Just tell me to shut up.
Quick look ahead to the weekend.
Can I just
bunch of games postponed.
Yeah, there is. And we should explain why they are. There's two Category A matches, Manchester United and Leeds United. The policing needed for the weekend in London is going to require that maybe not everybody, resources are going to be put elsewhere, guys. And if safety is the first thing, and if they can't make sure that the fixture can be policed safely, then it got postponed. Ditto with Chelsea and Liverpool. Obviously, with that being in London, it's an added complication. Brighton and Crystal Palace was postponed because there was supposed to be a rail strike happening that weekend, and they just left it postponed.
Huh.
The rail strike was cancelled, but they decided, again, resources being what they are, Brighton being on the south, so they just changed up. So those are the three games that are called off, which means Liverpool won't play until October.
Incredible. Incredible.
Might be helpful.
I mean, we've spent so much time talking about fatigue with them. So if any club needed that, I guess it would be them. Just a couple questions here. Any teams in particular that you would say are most in need of a win?
I think Villa, after the draw with City, they're at home to Southampton on Friday. They could really do with, like, hey, that wasn't just a fluke. That wasn't a back-to-the-wall effort. We're a good side. Let's kick on. Against a team that you don't know what you're going to get with Southampton, although I do think they're trending upward, generally speaking. Yeah. Forest and Fulham is an interesting one as well because, like, Forest have signed all these players. They haven't been great. Fulham have kind of
They've
been very good. So it's interesting to see battle of the promoted teams there. Also curious about Tottenham. Tottenham have Leicester City, and anything short of a battering of Leicester will...
So, yeah, this was one I had circled for two reasons. One, Brendan Rodgers, come on down. You're the next contestant on managerial hot seat.
Yeah, and he seems to be following the Eddie Howe, not the Eddie Howe, the Scott Parker line of, let me have a go at my owners for not backing me and see what happens.
I mean... they did nothing in the window, so I get what he's saying.
Yeah.
And they did lose one of their best players in Fofana. But yeah, so I have it circled for them. And then from the Tottenham perspective, at home, coming off a Champions League loss, now they're playing a team in horrible form in Leicester. Tottenham are fine. They haven't lost yet. The only reason I even bring them up is because coming off the loss and playing this one at home against the bad team, Antonio Conte is always just a thread away from breakdown. And I just wonder, like, if they lose this one, are we already at, that's it, I'm out, I'm done, I can't do this? Now, I don't actually believe that, but, like, the ball rolls quickly with him, it seems.
It does, and we all remember when they lost at Burnley last spring, or was it February? I can't remember, it was sometime in that kind of... wintery, springy time, and
I'm not the man for this job.
He was windswept on the sideline. When I'm having a really tough time and things are on top of me, I'm going to text you a picture of him on the sideline,
and I'll know.
And you'll know.
It'll be like a help me bat signal.
Exactly. You'll know exactly.
The other one I wanted to mention was Everton,
home to West Ham.
Yeah,
on Sunday. That's an interesting one. West Ham need a result. Everton don't have a win yet. However, they played the best I've seen them play under Lampard in the Merseyside Derby. They seem like a more front foot, proactive team. Now they've got to go and do it. against a team that's not in great form either. That could be a good game, actually.
Yeah, it could be. 16th versus 18th in the table.
Why do I think
two.
Frank Lampard versus David Moyes could be a good game in that chirpy voice? It could also be Drek, guys.
It's possible.
Drek. And Brentford and Arsenal, a measure of how far Arteta's boys have come.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the tweet? Just had a nice kick around in the park with the lads.
Ivan Toney.
Now, this is the return to the place of such pain last season where they opened their campaign. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the games.
There you go. Let's close on a mailbag now.
Let's do that. Eddie got in touch with us, Andrew. What do we think about Todd Bowley's comments about an EPL All-Star game?
Here we go.
Let's go with the first Bowley cut. Let's hear what Hank Scorpio had to say. He was speaking at the SALT, General Thinkers and Rich Man's Union Business Meeting.
There's no one who's thinking about tanking. And those relegation games are some of the highest broadcast games. I mean, ultimately, I hope that the Premier League takes a little bit of a lesson from American sports and really starts to figure out, you know, why wouldn't we do a tournament, you know, with the bottom four teams? Why isn't there an All-Star game? I mean, people are talking about more money for the pyramid. You know, MLB did their All-Star game in LA this year. We made $200 million from, you know, a Monday and a Tuesday. You know, so, you know, I think you could do a North versus South, you know, All-Star game for Premier League and fund whatever the pyramid needed very easily.
Now, people have got very upset about the concept of an All-Star game, which I think is just a daft concept. And I don't see the need for it. I don't see the space for it. I don't see what it achieves. I also think a lot of fans who have these, like, entrenched rivalries then suddenly have to care about Erling Haaland playing alongside Mohamed Salah. And I just don't. The concept to me, it's unnecessary. But the subtext of what he's saying is way more interesting to me. I have got caught up. I don't like the All-Star game idea, period. Just don't see the need for it. It's a bad idea. But the subtext is, and why he's thinking of it, is funding the pyramid. Like, the Premier League turns over $5 billion a year. The idea that we need something to raise money for the pyramid. No, Todd. Pay out your obligations. And what he sees coming down the line is there's been a fan-led review which has gone to the government and they're supposed to be producing a white paper on football. And one of those suggestions is that more solidarity payments, not less, come from the Premier League to fund down the EFL and the grassroots pyramid.
Well, maybe that's what he's talking about.
Well, no. That is what he's talking about.
Right.
He doesn't want to put his hand in his pocket. He does not want that coming from the revenues of the Premier League or the revenues he'd accrue.
He's saying let's create a way.
A charity game for them rather than do what the responsible thing is and pay your way. Rather than flogging the players and creating some daft concept of a North v. South. No one can tell me, is Wolverhampton in the North or the South?
Well,
Leicester in the North or the South?
So now I got to defend the American. Oh, great.
It's not about, by the way, this is not, when I talk about Americans in this context, this is not John in Albuquerque who loves watching English football.
I understand.
This is a very specific type of American.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't get caught up in the North versus South thing. He's spitballing. It could just as easily be what the NBA All-Star game is, and De Bruyne and Salah choose up teams, and now you've got a TV event right there of them deciding who they want on their squads.
Who's watching this? I mean,
it's fun in the NBA if you get guys who are personalities.
Apart
it's
from
fun.
Americans, who's watching this?
So here's something that I found interesting because, look, I don't think that this idea is necessary in the Premier League.
Right.
We already talk about the disease of more. Too much football. We're past the point of saturation. Do we need this? No, I don't think we need this. But I also believe that sometimes the messenger is just as important as the message. And no one wants to hear this from this guy right now, from an American guy who just came into this league. Oh, we don't even know you. You're going to come in and start bringing your American ideals before we've even got a chance to know anything about you and who you are. So the messenger is important here. Doesn't mean that his ideas are bad.
That idea is bad.
We just don't want to hear it from him. That idea might be bad. Is the other one bad? The relegation playoff? Other leagues in Europe do it. Why couldn't the Premier League do something like that?
But what's wrong with what we have right now?
I'm not saying
why are you dragging
it, but,
like,
but I'm just
three
saying,
up, three down? Why are you dragging the fourth team into it? Like, why would we do? I mean, again, it happens in Germany. It's happened in other places.
I mean, the championship, they have a playoff for their promotion playoff.
Like, he wants a tournament. He's talking about a tournament, though.
Well, it would be four teams. 20 plays 16, 20 plays 17, 18, 19. Like, that's a tournament.
All right.
That's all it is. Doesn't mean, look, again, it's the messenger. Like, if a British guy bought the Sixers, and before I even got a chance to know him, he gave a press conference and said something to the effect of, oh, well, you know, if they're looking to raise revenue, we can take Philadelphia off of the Sixers jersey and put a sponsor on there. And now we've raised $500 million over the course of the
year. You freaked the F out.
Right. And I would say, oh, who do you think you are showing up all of a sudden with your British ideals, trying to take Philadelphia off of the Sixers off of this jersey so you can put a sponsor on there? Just because they do it in soccer doesn't mean it's the messenger. Like, it doesn't mean his idea is bad. It might raise a ton of money. It might lower ticket prices if they found a new stream of revenue. But we don't want to hear it from that guy because he's not one of us. Like, I thought this was funny. Taylor Twellman unearthed a tweet today. It said, baseball all-star game tonight. TV coverage is quality. We need a Premier League all-star game too. The powers that be, let's talk and develop this. You know who tweeted that? Rio Ferdinand back in 2011. Did he get killed for it? The messenger matters. We don't want to hear it from an American guy right now. We just, Premier League fans, English fans, they don't want that. And so, like, again, all-star game, you're right. It's probably not a good idea. But it doesn't mean that all of the ideas that he brings to the table are going to be bad. But people, I would say to Todd Boehly, tread lightly. You might actually have good ideas here. But, like, don't come in with this American flag wrecking ball to this league, all right? Just, like, bide your time, and then, like, if you have ideas and whatever the meetings are that occur with all these different owners and boards and all that, you know, then get them in. But Premier League fans are not ready to hear this from you right now. It's too soon. We don't even know you yet.
Yeah. Well,
so there's tact and, like, politics involved in this. It's not just, like, you don't just show up and start throwing out ideas that are going to rattle the boat. It's too soon for that. We got to get to know the messenger before we appreciate the message.
Well, he had other messages that I really didn't like, and this one I think is much more concerning than any faff about a north-south game.
You know, I think we've been talked about having a multi-club model. I would love to, continue to build out the footprint. You know, I think that there's different countries where there's advantages to having a club. Red Bull does a really good job. They've got Leipzig and they've got Salzburg, and both of which are playing in Champions League. So they've figured out how to make that work. You have Man City, which has a very big network of clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the challenge that Chelsea has right now, or one of them, is that, when you have 18, 19, 20-year-old superstars, you can loan them out to other clubs, but you put their development in someone else's hands, right? So I think that, our goal is to make sure we can show pathways for our young superstars to get onto the Chelsea pitch while getting them real game time. And to me, the way to do that is through, another club somewhere in a really competitive league in Europe.
I mean, if you're in Austria, Italy, Denmark.
Yeah, I don't need my league being turned into a Premier League farm system.
A vassal state.
Yeah,
that to me is scary, and that's where they want to take it. And he also was under the impression that De Bruyne and Salah were academy products at Chelsea, when in fact they were. He listed them later on in the conversation. So that's the stuff that concerns me.
I get that.
And we've already seen Manchester City had to be ran out of, I think it was 20 in Holland. They were about to buy an Eredivisie club there, and I think they ended up buying someone in Serie A. Was it Cagliari or Palermo, or in Italian football? So this is happening already. This isn't, as Todd Boehly says, it's not his idea. It's something that's happening already. And to do that to foreign leagues would be just terrible. It's an awful idea. Let's move on. Harvey. iHarvey4. As an Orlando fan, last Wednesday's game was electric. Being in the stands was like nothing I've experienced before. That would have been
the
cup final, the Lamar Hunt Open Cup final. I was wondering if Andrew has ever been to a cup final or any final, and what was JJ's favourite final to be at? Obviously not Paris. No, not Paris. I'll do mine quickly. My favourite final was the FAI Cup final November 2013, before I moved out here. And it was Sligo Rovers 3, Drogheda United 2 after extra time. Just a brilliant game. Absolutely brilliant game. I was working for the radio station covering it, and it was... What an absolute...
I'd like to hear that tape.
A thrilling game. Well, I gave the
tape. Were you professional?
I was. I used my tape when I was getting the job here at ESPN. They wanted to hear tape.
Really?
I gave them that. I was like, here.
I wasn't in on those meetings.
You were not. You were not allowed in. They didn't value your input at all. You were just to make sure I didn't swear on air. That was your immediate function.
I've never been to a cup final.
Of like in any sport?
No, I have in other sports.
Tell me.
I've been to multiple Final Fours in college basketball. The main one, some of them were for work. The one for a fan, I was there in New Orleans when Syracuse beat Kansas.
Wow, that's
the greatest
pretty.
Moments of my life. Sitting right in the section where Hakeem Warrick blocked Michael Lee on the three-pointer.
I'd say you were very present in that moment.
I was present. And then a few hours later, I don't know where I was. I was there. I was at the 2001 NBA Finals. Sixers Lakers.
That's great.
Well,
I know, but
it was.
It's
it was
still
cool.
A great.
It was cool. Wasn't great watching them lose 3 straight to the Lakers, but it was Iverson in his absolute heyday, and it was amazing. I'll never forget those memories.
He's your beloved.
No one's close. And then I've been to the World Series twice, but never a decisive game. So I don't know if that counts.
No, that counts.
Okay, because I was at game 4 in 2008 when the Phillies were playing the Rays, and I was at game 3 in 2009 when the Phillies played the Yankees. So I didn't see a trophy handed out. Like, when I went to the 2001 NBA Finals, I was there game 5 the night the Sixers lost and the Lakers got a trophy. Obviously, the Final Four, it's one and done. So.
Did you stay for the trophy ceremony?
I don't think they did it on the court. I think that was a time. It might have been a mistake to do it on the court in Philly. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember if they did.
Yes, it would have been.
What I remember is, I think it was in game 3, Destiny's Child performed.
Oh God, no!
And so, back when Beyonce was in Destiny's Child, and so they come out, and there's 3 of them, and so they need some kind of symmetry. So one's wearing a generic NBA shirt. One's wearing a Sixers Iverson jersey, and one's wearing a Lakers jersey. And because of the one girl, I don't remember which one it was, wearing that Lakers jersey.
Kelly, can you handle this? Beyonce, can you handle this?
JJ, their entire performance, it's probably still, it might be on YouTube. I was in the building. You couldn't hear them singing. The boos did not stop. They did not stop. It was the entire time. And so the next night for game 4, remember Sugar Ray?
Oh,
so they perform.
Every morning,
so obviously, exactly. So obviously, he had just seen the mutilation of poor Destiny's Child that occurred the night before.
So he came out in full Phillies gear.
Well, no, I don't think I think they were just wearing generic clothing. But he would slip in. He'd be singing, and then, like, you know, when it goes to kind of like a musical interlude or something, you know, he would just drop in. The Sixers owner back then was this man named Pat Croce, who was beloved in Philadelphia. And he must have said something to someone beforehand of like, tell me something that the people here like. Well, they like Pat Croce. So he'd be singing along. Duh, duh, duh. Hey, Pat Croce, best owner in sports. Duh,
duh, duh, duh. Yeah!
it was pandering 101.
Oh, you got to do that.
Oh, yeah. 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 So that's one of it was funny.
Adam asks us, what do you think of Erling Haaland only getting a FIFA 23 rating of 88 compared to Mbappe's rating of 91?
It's an abomination.
Is it? Is 88 that bad?
It's an abomination.
Also, if you were going to rate them overall, what would it be? I would still have him. I think Mbappe is an all-round better footballer than Haaland. I think he's a more skillful footballer, but I think Haaland's an amazing footballer too. So.
They should have the same rating.
Oh, I don't think so.
They should have the same rating.
All right.
I have the ratings here. Now, I don't know when these are determined, and I don't know what FIFA and EA Sports can do on the fly. I think they can, like, change things as the season is progressing. And I would tell them they got some work to do because Ronaldo is a 90. He's not playing. That's got to come down.
Oh, jeez.
That's got to come down. He won't
allow it. imagine the amount of legal documents that would be sent to EA Sports if they took Ronaldo down.
Son is an 89. It's got to come down. He's not an 89 right now. Got to come down.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
Give him an 87. I don't know something, but he's not an 89 right now. And by the way, for all of the gripes that Courtois has had in the past about, you know, I'm not respected. Well, you're the highest rated goalkeeper in this game, all right? You got your respect. You're a 90. Respect earned, my friend.
All right. Forget the ratings for 1 second.
But Haaland, I mean, look, he's like, he's below Son. He's below Casemiro.
Okay, that's not right, he's, then. Below Casemiro?
Yeah, he's the same as Marquinhos and Toni Kroos.
Overall? Like,
he's an 88.
No, that's
he's got to be right there with the top of him. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not right. I don't get that. I just thought...
It's probably because, like, you know how they have different attributes. So if his speed isn't Mbappe's, like, he's not as fast as Mbappe.
Do they have run like a goon?
Right. What is his ranking in Frankenstein qualities?
Let's see. I can't even pronounce his name. Bisrat Walde?
Okay.
Thoughts on those cancelled games and the inevitable congestion to come? Just a quick thought. They're going to stick it on the later base. They have some space baked in March for Premier League games. Now, there's not much, and it's very tight, but I think they have a midweek Wednesday or something in March that they can get those games in. But it will be super tight, and the season contractually cannot go any longer. So it's got those games have got to be played, and it's looking like it'll be March from what I've read and heard.
It's not ideal. The reason that I don't feel like I am going to complain about it that much is...
Because you love the royal family.
Well, no, I didn't say that. It'll vary depending on different teams that are going, you know, that are still going in the Champions League or League Cup or FA Cup. So it will vary. But by and large, this is affecting everyone. You know, I know only certain games are being postponed this weekend, so that will add a little bit of congestion. But like Liverpool, like we said, now have like 3 weeks off compared to others who are playing now. So like everyone, this is not right now entirely unique to one club or two clubs. A lot of teams are being affected by this. So it's kind of one of those like everyone's got to deal with it. So you do. I'm not going to stress over it.
Yeah. Finally, Xavier Lynch. JJ, was Henry Hill right getting mad at Karen for getting rid of the drugs? Was the kitchen cupboard a legit good hiding spot?
Where did this come from?
Great question, because he knows I'm a mob guy.
I know, but were you tweeting about, like, did you just rewatch or
something? No. Okay. Xavier just pulled it out, and well done to him for that. So when you see in the scene where the feds are raiding the house, she's in the cupboard. They would definitely have found them in the cupboard. Mm. But in the scene where Henry is looking for the drugs and hasn't yet realized they've gone down the toilet, he's looking in the entertainment center. They're not there. So I don't quite get what... I suppose there was an arrogance that runs right through the film where Henry Hill just said all the time, doesn't matter what we do, we pay off the cops, we pay off judges, we pay off lawyers, we pay off district attorneys, we do all that, and we could do what we want with complete impunity. And I guess this was the first time that it happened to be the case that, no, there was nowhere else to hide.
Reality caught up to him.
Exactly, and that was it. And so I think that's what Scorsese, Maddie, was trying to show in that scene. But great question.
There you go. That was a fun mailbag.
Excellent mailbag. Very rich and diverse, I would say.
NYCFC just scored again. It's
2-0.
Who was that, Maxi Morales?
Oh, it's a nice little move. Bing. Low drive, bottom right-hand corner. Oh, it's a good finish. Yeah. Cross his body. It's good stuff.
It's been a good year for MLS.
Sure. Definitely.
Good year. That's all I got.
I'm spent.
Yeah, we'll have more games over the weekend. Not all the games, but we'll have enough where we'll certainly have a robust podcast next week. I'm looking forward to it very much, JJ.
Yeah, and we're going to be in the moment.
We will be present. Hey, good stuff, my friend. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.